Welcome back, Left Reckoners. I'm Matt Leck. With me is David Griscom. Hello, David.
Hey, brother.
Hello. And joining us now is Max Berger. Max is previously from More Perfect U.S., Justice Democrats, Elizabeth Warren, Cori Bush, also the core founder of If Not Now, Momentum Movements. Max, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And you were also the proprietor of the Optimism of the Will Substack, and you recently had a piece on there that I don't know if you guys remember, like Jetsons Meet the Flintstones style crossover events, but they really were fire for me when I was young. And your more recent blog is sort of a crossover of two villains from last year, which is all of the pro-Israel money flooding elections against Democrats, and also crypto guys. And it turns out that there's a lot of crossover there. So we've talked about Sam Bankman-Fried, Jacob Silverman, so we don't need to go too deep into his sort of background with crypto. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Sam Bankman-Fried's Democrats, because since this stuff has come out about SBF, there's been this play by Republicans to say, look at this Democrat partisan come over right here to ruin crypto. And that's not the full story. We know that by his admission, if you can trust it, he's donated to Republicans quietly in the Democrat donations were public because he thought those would help him. But I think this moment calls for, like your blog post, scrutiny of who were the Democrats mm-hmm. he was giving money to. Mm-hmm. So I guess start there, like Sam Bankman-Fried, what sort of Democrats was he given to?
Yeah. So, you know, for reference, part of the reason I was following the story is as a former JD person, Justice Dems person, and, you know, having a lot of friends there, we were hearing anecdotally about sort of the flood of money that was going into these races. And it was very clear that, you know, in the same way that Democratic Majority for Israel, which was kind of the first of the pro-Israel groups to get super involved in the primary fights, in the same way that they were kind of specifically targeting Justice Dems races, that there were new interests who realized, like, basically the DMFI folks proved that flooding the zone with money could work. Mm-hmm. and that there wasn't a huge cost politically for doing that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they sort of demonstrated that there's a model in which interests who, you know, it would be kind of negative for a Democrat to be associated with that interest could get away with taking money from those groups and using it in a Democratic primary without that tarnishing the Democrat that they were supporting. Right.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, like, you know, if you're a Democrat, you don't want to take money from a Trump supporting billionaire. You don't want to take money necessarily from AIPAC directly. So how do you use the money that those groups have to shut down Justice Democrats style, you know, help limit the growth of the squad, make sure there are no new left yep. Democrats in Congress? And DMFI kind of innovated this strategy. And then what we saw this cycle was AIPAC directly jumping in a massive scale. And then also there kind of ends up being this shared effort and shared campaign between those kind of pro-Israel groups, the Trump supporting billionaires who are funding AIPAC directly and funding this effort directly, and SBF and a lot of his political giving and the groups that he helps fund. And to your point, Matt, like in if we look at the overall amount of spending that Sam Bankman-Fried did in the Democratic Party this cycle, it was somewhere on the order of $40 million. I think it was actually around $38 million. 75% of that, $29 million, was spent on groups that primarily gave money that was used in Democratic primaries. Mm-hmm. So he was not mostly helping Democrats defeat Republicans in general elections. Right. SBF was mostly giving money to groups that were helping defeat progressives in Democratic primaries, in which there was a competitive race between an establishment candidate and the left. There is another strategy that he did, which is to try to pick off a handful of token progressives that I think Sean McElwee was instrumental in. Mm. And that has confused a number of journalists, because they'll tell you, oh, well, there's, what about, you know, one or two candidates that protect our future, which is SBF's group gave to. Mm-hmm. I can get into details about that. That is it's a pretty nuanced part of the story. So you have to be following it very closely, even more closely than some of these journalists did, I think, mm-hmm. to really understand what was going on there. But the vast majority of the money was going to what I call the Injustice Democrats, in which the pro-Israel groups and the crypto groups were working together to make sure that progressive candidates lost primaries.
Yeah, and like you say, Democratic Majority for Israel, that has a close relationship to AIPAC, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's de facto AIPAC for Democrats. Right. Like, the guy who started it, Mark Melman, has previously done a lot of work with and for AIPAC. I don't believe he actually ever worked as a full-time employee there, but he was a consultant for a number of their kind of spin-off groups. And basically the story with the Israel stuff is that at some point AIPAC's, you know, in the last five-ish years, AIPAC's brand becomes so toxic that they mm-hmm. Democrats don't want to be associated with it. But they still want, and in a way, the fact that they're getting this involved in the primaries is an indication of the fact that they're losing. Like, they used mm-hmm. to be able to just use the threat of them opposing you to just get everyone to fall into line. And the fact that they, you know, that they have to be so brutal and direct with the amount of money that they're spending, and the fact that it's them, you know, it's right. not behind the scenes, is a reflection of the fact that the squad is, you know, that there is a new perspective in the party on the issue, and that they're losing the base. So they're now scrambling, and DMFI is a huge part of that. They're really like the centerpiece of their strategy to get Democrats back into line.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, like, so I think, like, there is, it's basically Democratic Majority, and we want to make sure we're in on that majority. So we're going, because like you say in your piece, these are safe Democrat seats often that they're engaging in, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you want to take these folks on their merits, right, mm-hmm. which, you know, so there's one group that's involved in the Injustice Democrats. It's AIPAC affiliated groups, which is DMFI, and this group called the United Democracy Project. There's the crypto groups, which is Web3 Forward and Protect Our Future. And then there's this other group called Mainstream Democrats that's funded by Reid Hoffman, who is a billionaire who started LinkedIn. Mm. Hoffman is actually, you know, they get that group gives way less money, but I included them because I think it really clarifies what their argument is, which is like, we are trying to stop the left and make sure that Democrats are mainstream, right? Mm. If you wanted to give them, just take that argument seriously, right? What you would expect is they would focus on kind of close generals, right? Like they would focus on places where a Republican really had a shot at winning, and to make sure that there was a candidate that was consistent with that district and that could is more likely to defeat a Republican. But that is not, those are not the races that they chose. They overwhelmingly were working in very safe blue districts in which there's really not a credible argument that it's about ensuring that Democrats win more seats. It's really, really clear. It's about, we are trying to influence the direction of the Democratic Party to ensure that these new working class candidates that are going to actually fight for a social democratic agenda are not going to be the face of the Democratic Party, that we're going to ensure that it's corporate Democrats who still have their hands on the levers of power. And we're going to use as much money as we need to make it happen. And
you quote Reid, say, Mainstream Democrats PAC was founded as the only Democratic group with the courage to consistently defend mainstream Democrats and defeat extreme candidates whose stated goal is to overthrow the Democratic Party.
And it's on their website.
Yeah. Like AOC is not like trying to destroy the Democratic Party because of civil rights. She's trying to release it from control of people like Reid Hoffman. And that's fundamentally like the counter-revolution Reid is after. And I also want to say, like, all these people that they're spending against, these Democrats, I would like if they were, you know, very and a lot of them have good positions on Palestine, but they're not like BDS activists, right?
No. They've already been moderated, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, they're it's complicated. You know, this is an issue I've spent a lot of time on. It's like, with some of them, there are people in the district who are actually, you know, in a different place than you and I would be on the issue. And so they're trying to represent those people as well. But yeah, they're not, especially when you consider it by international standards or what the issue actually requires. Like, there's hardly anyone in Congress who significantly varies from like a J Street perspective, which is a very center left liberal, you know, kind of in its own way, establishment-y perspective. Like, they're not that far from the kind of mainstream yeah. Democratic perspective. But I think that the AIPAC folks are not wrong that there's a potential for that to shift.
Right.
Because in some ways, events on the ground are making it very difficult to mm-hmm. defend what the Israeli government is doing. It's almost impossible at this point to do with a straight face. So I think that the space that, these DMFI types are standing on is really, it's evaporating under their feet.
Interesting. Cause like that's something that I'm curious about with this question is like, which is the motive, the more motivating? Is it lobbying on behalf of Israel so that there's not further criticism, or is it, or are these just so synergistic that it doesn't matter?
I think that it's like in the same way that there's a lot of overlap between different interests on our side and people who, if I were to ask you guys, do you care about union rights, or do you care about, Medicare for all, or do you really actually care about something else? And you're like, I care about all those things, mm-hmm. And when you think about what it means to like build a faction or build a party, it really is about making sure that the different interests that have one or two of those as their leading things are working together on stuff. And I think it's more that, and it's a tricky thing. Part of what makes this so cynical and makes me pissed off as a Jew about this is that, like, when I was thinking about it, I was talking to a journalist about this. He was like, why do you think they didn't just do it as one thing? Like, if you're saying that these guys were all kind of working together, why wasn't it all one thing? And I realized, like, the Trump billionaires gave their money through AIPAC because it's the hardest one for the candidates to criticize, because then they sound anti-Semitic. Because if you just describe what was going on here, it sounds kind of anti-Semitic. So it's like hard if you're not a Jew, who, it's also like it's a complicated issue for people to navigate, to not accidentally say something anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, but I think it is important to sort of draw out these differences and nuances and that you're identifying in your question, because I think I don't think Sam Bankman-Fried gives a fuck about Israel. he was like, yeah, I'm riding with these guys because we have shared political interests and the strategy makes sense for both of us. If we can mm-hmm. pay off Democrats to support us on an issue that they wouldn't otherwise, who am I going to end up with? I'm going to end up with all the worst people who have to pay off Democrats to support their interest because it's a terrible issue. And so it's not a coincidence that these guys all end up on the same team, but it's not that they necessarily agree on the, I'm sure that the AIPAC people don't give a fuck about crypto. I'm sure that the pro-Trump billionaire types who are just trying to make sure that taxes don't go up and that workers don't unionize don't give a shit about either of those things.
Even on that, like in this cycle, the DMFI ads and things that they were running oftentimes had very little to do, if nothing to do with Israel, right? It would be.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I mean, it just like, it's notable the way that they're playing. I just wanted to bring this up and pull this from your piece, because like, a lot of the places where this money was flooding in, like we're fairly, is that coming up right for y'all? We're like fairly competitive races. Like I know one I followed closely, Cisneros Cuellar here. I mean, $2.6 million is like a pretty significant chunk of change in a race like that. So, the story here, I guess, is like beyond it just being, Sam Bankman-Fried is like putting money into these races, et cetera, maybe trying to get some favors, but that actually probably was influential in the end results. And that's a story of itself.
Yeah, I think the race that is most clearly crypto money that makes the difference is the Nita Alam versus Valerie Foushee race down in North Carolina, in which the majority of the money comes from the pro-Israel groups. The SBF gave money to DMFI, which was one of the things that I found that I didn't previously know. It was a small amount compared to the overall, what they gave. But, so yes, the pro-Israel money definitely made a difference in basically every race that progressives lost. And if you go down the list, it also is insane, because you're like, they had so much goddamn money that they were pouring $1 million into these races that were just some random activists that did not have the backing of the Justice Dems or the WFP or the DSA that like could really carry people forward. They were just like, they were just firebombing, you know, which is really depressing. But then you're right. Like there's a money bazooka that they pointed at the 3 to 5 races that, you know, progressives really targeted. And the one where Protect Our Future, which is the crypto money, was really determinative was, again, Nita Alam's race, in which I think it's very clear that Nita would have won if it wasn't for the Protect Our Future money. And she would have been a really amazing member of Congress. Like she didn't quite get the national shine of the Cisneros race, but she would have been a very solid, charismatic squad member who was, especially on these issues, really great. So, it's really disappointing. And I think it's also meant to, scare people.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you think, gauge like your perspective on how, like the courage levels, the graph, if we could graph it over time on this issue, do you think like the one reason I wanted to cover this is because I think like the more progressives understand this, the more they're willing to say, okay, we actually do need to confront this. How would you gauge the sort of courage levels over this?
On Israel specifically?
Yeah. I think maybe on Israel specifically, because otherwise, I think most Democrats are going to say like, we don't support corporate money.
Yeah. Well, I think the crypto piece is actually also interesting, but I'll answer both. I mean, right. I think if you were to ask most, not just progressives, but rank and file Democrats, how they felt about this issue, you would hear something different than what they feel comfortable saying in their race. I think most people understand that this is like a very significant human rights violation and that the U.S. support for the Israeli government, and in particular, I think the defense, the defense aid, which is where it comes down to on a policy level most acutely at this point, is really indefensible. And at the very least, we need to condition that aid. I mean, that's such a timid demand in the scope of that. I mean, it's really crazy. But, I think that Democrats generally are shifting on this issue. I think progressives have a lot further that they could go in terms of pushing them on it. I think that AIPAC is trying to put the genie back in the bottle on this. And the success of the money this cycle, I think, will scare people. I mean, I think that it will make it more difficult to... I think that they are right that the trend is so hard against them that they needed to have an avalanche of money to stop it. And I don't think that they can kind of medium to long term for two reasons, honestly. One is, if you look at the shifts in perspective amongst Democratic voters, right? It's pretty dramatic. Like it used to be that people overwhelmingly identified with the Israelis and were not very warm towards Palestinians. And I think that for many reasons, social media being one of them, also just the racial composition of Democratic voters, that's shifting pretty dramatically in a generational way, in which more and more Democrats are like, I think I kind of identify more with the Palestinians.
Yeah.
I
don't think it helped that BB came and like tried to own Obama.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that's so funny about that is because I remember when that happened, I was like, this is going to be a huge opening. And like, it hasn't really played out in the way that I expect. I mean, like, it's moved some things, but like, I thought this was going to be a sort of like done thing.
Right.
To a certain extent. That did not happen.
No, but I do think, I basically think that structural tension is totally irresolvable on their part. Like, they're fucked because it's not a coincidence that basically Bibi and the Israeli government is part of this alignment of right-wing ethno-nationalists around the world. You know, it's Bolsonaro and Duterte and frankly Putin, who they all have a much warmer perspective towards than most even liberal democratic regimes. So I think that, and I think more and more American Jews are beginning to understand the space between both Democrats and American Jews and the Israeli political system is becoming more and more vast every year. And the Israelis are embracing that, actually, which is surprising. They think that they're going to be fine with a combination of Republican support and evangelical support. And I would not take that bet if I was them. I think that they are going to lose Democrats in a historic way, and it is going to have a significant impact on the relationship between Israel and the United States. It may take 5 or 10 years for that to happen, but it seems kind of impossible for them to totally put the genie back in the bottle, because the facts on the ground are also just getting, I mean, it's getting harder to ignore the reality of what's happening there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I definitely want to talk a little bit more about the crypto stuff in a second, but just while we're on Israel and thinking about progressives running for office, I mean, you know, here in Austin, we had Greg Kassar, who's now a congressperson, mm-hmm. somebody who I generally support, but, you know, when he was running, I think it was in the primary when this happened, somebody leaked a letter that he wrote to a rabbi. Yeah. And that was, from what I've gathered from my friends on the ground, that was like a purposeful leak to try to create division. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, I think Greg didn't want to have to come up against DMFI money in that race. Yeah. So he basically put out a statement that was like not a hardline statement on Israel. I think we have to be clear on this. It was pretty squishy, like centrist liberal position on it. But obviously that created a huge fracture with the DSA, and it led to him actually dropping his consideration for being endorsed, which for me as Austin and somebody in Austin, somebody who's a member of DSA, was a huge loss, because I think Greg is great on a lot of other issues. But that was like a real time moment where you can see how this can be utilized, even in a situation where it looks like Greg's probably going to win, et cetera, to like fracture the progressive left movement on this.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's a really, it's tough. I think it, for me, in responding to this stuff too, it's really hard to say like with which hat I am responding, because I would give really different answers depending on different what hat I'm wearing. You know what I mean? Like if I'm a Cesar supporter operative, right? I'm like, look, man, maybe you take that deal. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not saying that is like a just.
No, I understand the rationale. But,
you know, if I'm me, if not now, founder, I'm like, we got to get more money behind these guys. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, if they're like, hey, if I'm good on this issue, they're going to put $3 to $5 million to crush me. And if I'm there politically, morally, but should I be in Congress or not? Like, it's really that simple. Then there's a practical matter that needs to be resolved. You know what I mean? I think if I'm a DSA member, which I'm a shitty paper member, then, you know, I don't know what I would say, honestly, because I'm like, I understand the political move that Greg makes, but I'm also like, this is pretty fucked up. You know? Like it's pretty fucked up. And it's so, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough thing. And it's so naked and brazen that you think that there was more of a cost to it, but they can somehow get away with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, when you think about a race like that, too, it's like you're going to be going up against real estate lobby here. Elon Musk, our new favorite resident, you know, all these other things, the workers' rights fights, all these other fights, which are very well funded. It's like, do you want to have to fight on 4 or 5 different fronts, or can you narrow it down? Again, like for my position as a, you know, DSA member, just as like a socialist, it's just like, you start dropping Palestine now, it starts to become harder, I think, down the road to pick that up. That argument doesn't work for me. But again, I can understand if you are just trying to say, I can only fight on so many fronts. I get where people could make that decision. That's not necessarily like the most cynical or like, you know, turning your back on Palestinian people, but still inexcusable in my opinion. But yeah, like, I was hoping to talk a little bit more about the crypto stuff, but just, you know, and we'll put links, if people haven't been reading your excellent reporting on this, you know, could you just give people a general understanding of like what the mechanism that SBF is using to sort of put money into these races? And also if you have any sense about who might be influencing him, directing him, giving him any kind of insight as to where to be putting money?
Yeah. So I'll just also say, I think it's a really, we should return to the kind of like pressure tactics piece, because I think what you just described around Israel actually starts to happen with crypto too. And it starts to impact how people move on crypto. So just put a pin in that. But yeah, I think in terms of the questions you asked, he is giving most of his money through Protect Our Future, which is a PAC that ends up with, I think, around $26 million, that is almost all his money. I have not done enough reporting. So just to be clear about, I'm not a reporter. Like, yeah. This is my side hustle, like, just for fun, you know, like, and honestly, like the story behind this was I was talking to reporters being like, guys, you're missing the story here. Like there's a story here about how SBF is really helping pro-Israel folks crush the left. It's not this effective altruism or pandemic prepared. Like that's total bullshit. Like, I don't understand why people are falling for this. And so I just was like, I'm going to go review the numbers, because I did something when I was at More Perfect Union that sort of put this together. And then I just put all the spending that the DMF, that the pro-Israel groups and the crypto groups were doing side by side. And I was like, whoa, this is fucking crazy. You know? And it was really clear that they were targeting the same races. I think what, in terms of your question about who is he listening to and who is guiding this stuff, I have some sense of it, but it definitely needs more reporting. Mm-hmm. I think the two names that became clear to me. So his brother was doing a lot. Gabe Bankman-Fried was, I think, his kind of lead political advisor, and was doing most of the work to actually figure out how to spend a lot of this. From what I've heard from people, you know, Gabe actually did seem to believe in the effective altruism stuff and the pandemic preventative stuff, in a way that gives some plausible deniability, I think, to some of the candidates who received their support, because I don't think that Gabe was lying about that. I don't necessarily think Sam was either, but it just still doesn't matter, you know? It's not really what it's about. So if you look at Protect Our Future, I think that the two names that occur to me are, I think Mark Melman, who is the guy who started DMFI, was sort of the mastermind of this whole operation. That is my conclusion. I personally really dislike Mark Melman, and he has personally tried to get me fired from jobs. So I'm biased. I just want to be clear. like we have beef, you know, but as far as I can tell, the level of coordination, especially when I looked at the fact that there was money moving between these groups, like they were contributing money to each other, which my understanding is that would only happen if there was actual kind of operational organizational overlap, right? Like, otherwise, why would you give each other money if you're not reimbursing each other for work that you've done and things that you shared?
I'm not Venmoing anybody I don't actually like have some kind of relationship with.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think Melman is really at the centerpiece. And in some ways, I feel a little bit of regret, because I went into this being like, we need to, Sean McElwee needs to be held accountable for having really helped SBF and done a lot to direct this giving, which I do think is true. I think Sean is in some legal trouble, because I think Sean did a lot more than what, you know, what we're talking about here, which is kind of direct this giving, which is extremely corrupt and disgusting, but not illegal. And that Sean actually may have done some things that are illegal under our campaign finance rules, which include using straw donors. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but I don't know if it's worth explaining, but basically, like, it looks like Sean was taking money from SBF and then giving it to candidates under his name, and other people were doing that too, which is illegal. I mean, that's just money laundering, right? So a lot of people that I've spoken with about it wonder, why the hell would they do that when they're giving legally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars through these dark money PACs? So, like, why would they bother doing this, like, pittance?
Mm-hmm.
Unclear. I have no idea. There's still a lot to be uncovered here. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, the indictment against SBF included, FEC, you know, included federal campaign finance violations, and people are speculating that Sean may have been party to that. So Sean's going to be held accountable. Melman, on the other hand, has skated largely. Like, there has not really been much national political coverage about how the pro-Israel lobby, and Mark Melman in particular, were helping SBF coordinate his political operation. Which I think there needs to be more reporting to bear out the extent to which that is true. But the stuff I've uncovered, I think it certainly seems to point in that direction. So that was actually why I did it, was to hopefully get some folks to start digging who are actually, you know, reporters, unlike me.
Very nice. Well, people should still, whether you're a reporter or not, Optimism of the Will, maxberger.substack.com, is at Max Berger on Twitter. Max, thank you so much for coming and joining us and outlining this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime.
I appreciate it.